What's going on? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I'm your host, Brett McGrath. Today, it's the Collector Conversation. I got my man, Mike, at Fondling Cardboard. He has his own podcast about golf cards. We have a golf card fanatic today. We are going to be exploring how to collect golf cards. It is a lane that I know nothing about, so excited to dig in. It is master season happening right now, so there is no better time. Think you're going to like this conversation. If you like what I'm doing, tell a damn friend. But most importantly, join that Patreon group. It is the best way you can show your support for the Stacking Slabs podcast and platform. I am putting out new content in that daily and connecting with so many of you. Appreciate all the support. Without further ado, let's kick into the conversation. All right. I am excited for this conversation. Very timely, very topical with what's going on in sports. I am joined by Mike at the Golf Card Collector. He has a podcast called Fondling Cardboard. If you listen to Fondling Cardboard, you are going to learn a lot about golf card collecting, a niche in the hobby that I think there are a lot of passionate collectors around. It is the Masters week, so it just seemed like a good time to bring Mike on and talk golf and golf cards. And I know certainly I'm going to learn something from this. But without further ado, Mike, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Happy Masters week, Brett.
Yes. I want to tell you, so our neighbors next door, my street, we've all got like flags out on our houses. And our neighbor has had the same Mizzou flag. I think they both went to Missouri for college, literally since we've moved here. And I was walking up the steps and I peeked out the window and our neighbor had changed the Mizzou flag and he now has the Masters flag hanging out. So I'm looking at a huge Masters flag next door to me. So I know that it just seems like whether you're a golf fan or you just watch the Masters, this is one of those moments where it's like all attention is on golf when I don't think you can necessarily say that. So happy Masters to you. I'm sure you're super pumped.
Yeah, I really am. And speaking of flags, golf is unlike other sports where a flag is actually part of the field. So flags are common memorabilia to have autographed by golfers and whatnot.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought, hasn't crossed my mind. But it's funny just walking around town here, I've noticed more and more people in like Masters gear. So maybe before we get into golf cards, I know you've got like a pool, you've got a lot of Master stuff going on. I would love your outlook as me, someone who, you know, I'll watch a tournament here and there. I'll watch the Masters always, but maybe give me a little, like, as someone who's casual, what should I be looking for going into this Masters?
Well, I mean, Masters is always the exciting time of year for golf. It's basically the Super Bowl of golf, except it starts at the beginning of the season, which is a little backwards, I guess. I mean, in terms of storylines, in terms of things that you'll really get out of watching it this year, the storyline that's year over year is the LIV versus PGA. It reached a boiling point last year and things are kind of settling, I guess, because PGA and LIV have come to some kind of agreement, which, by the way, has not, the details have not settled out in that yet, but it's at least created this calmness, I guess, in the sport. But still, these PGA players and the LIV golf players don't get to see each other throughout the year. The only time they really cross paths is if a go-getter like Joaquin Neiman happens to be playing on an Asian tour or something like that. And then a PGA player who's also a go-getter and trying to become an up-and-comer, a qualify for bigger events, is also playing on some tour elsewhere in the world. That's the only time that these guys ever really cross paths other than the majors. So you'll be wanting to watch, you know, Bryson and Brooks, you know, the funny raised eyebrows and rolling eyes that the memes we were seeing years ago, that kind of stuff might get kickstarted again. But the biggest storyline for me is really just what Scottie Scheffler going to do. So people have started drawing comparisons between him and Tiger. Just looking at his last few events, he's won his last two out of three events. And the one he didn't win, he came second place. And this is that seems, you know, shocking. Maybe he's on this big trajectory. But for Scottie Scheffler, honestly, that's just business as usual.
So I know we're going to talk about live cards a little bit as a part of this, but I would love to get your perspective on the split. And it seemed like when the news originally hit and it started to take shape, there certainly was so much commentary on both sides about, you know, how terrible this is. And then there were some people that were like, this is a good thing. I don't know how long it's been, but maybe, like, how do you feel like the state of golf is based on the split at this point heading into the Masters?
It's really tough. I mean, that's invoking personal feelings, whoever you ask. So for me personally, I feel like it's exciting to see all of the best players. When I say best players, obviously the PGA has a lot of the best players and the LIV Tour has a lot of the best players. And so people got excited about LIV because they got to see the biggest names, Brooks Koepka, Sergio Garcia, Phil Mickelson, all these guys playing against each other and without just basically cutting out all the fodder, all the players that you don't really want to see at the top of the leaderboard. And so I was kind of excited about that aspect of it. But at the end of the day, anything that's splitting the best talent in the world is not necessarily good for the sport. So although there's this, you know, these hard feelings that have developed over recent years, you're right, there's controversy about where the money's coming from to fund LIV. You know, I want to try and put all that aside and find a way for them to come back together, because reuniting them would really be the best thing for golf, in my opinion.
I think you're someone who's in it all the time, but it seems to me I have seen more and more on my feed regarding golf cards, and I'm getting more educated than ever before on golf cards that have existed from the past and golf cards that are kind of going to be released soon, which I think is good. I'm a big fan of growing segments in the hobby. I think these little pockets in these micro communities are what keep people in the hobby and keep them continuing to, you know, spend their money and grow their collections. I'm curious on your end, just to kind of kick it off. You obviously are an advocate for golf cards. You have a collection of golf cards and you're passionate enough where you started content around golf cards. Maybe share some perspective, like what is it about golf and golf cards to you to make you go as all in as you have?
Well, obviously it's a combination of passion for golf and cards. My passion for golf is actually just started in my adult years. When I was a kid, I always wanted to play golf. And my dad basically said, don't play golf unless you get lessons. So when he started playing, he kept getting screwed up by things he was trying to teach himself. And I was never really advocating for myself, saying, I want to get lessons. Somebody pay for my lessons as a teenager. And so it wasn't until I got into sales and I had opportunities to take customers golfing that I said, well, I better seize the opportunity because you only live once. And the moment I tried it, I got hooked. So that combined with a lifetime of collecting cards meant once kind of that pandemic time frame hit, everybody's pulling their cards out. And I had been slowly collecting cards like sporadically over the years. Like I was hard into it as a kid, a teenager, and then it kind of dropped off once I got into playing sports myself and started getting attention from girls. And then, but over the years, I still loved the cardboard. And so I'd pick up a blaster box or I played trading card games as well. I'd buy some cards here and there. And then when the pandemic hit, everybody's pulling out their cards. I realized that doing some quick research, oh my gosh, there's golf cards. And it was basically the only sport that I really watched on TV. And so during that research, I realized, why are these cards all older? There's nothing recent. There's nothing since 2014, actually. So I discovered serendipitously that the 2021 Upper Deck golf sets were going to be the first golf sets coming out in 7 years. There had been nothing in the golf world for 7 years. And that was, you know, a few months out from when I was getting hardcore back into collecting and kind of obsessing over golf cards. And the fact that I was on the precipice of the excitement, all this buildup of new golf cards, it just basically made me go all in on golf. In terms of content creation, I just became a huge enthusiast for golf cards. And a friend of mine who has a podcast ask me, would you like to come on my show and basically be our golf cart expert? I hate the word expert because
just correspondent.
Correspondent. There we go. I like the word correspondent because you mentioned some of my pools that I'm running for Masters, and I've had people from around the world. Of course, golf is popular in Scotland and Australia, even in Europe. And I've had these people from my group saying, hey, do you mind if I join the pool, even though I'm way over here? And because part of my pool involves actual golf cards as prizes. And so I said, absolutely. You can be my German correspondent. We've got a Australian correspondent. So I joined my friend's podcast basically as a co-host, you know, every few weeks, once a month sort of thing. The problem with that situation was he was hyper-focused on flipping and investing as a way to participate in the hobby. And I don't necessarily think that calling myself a pure collector is the right thing to do, because, you know, we can get a little bit higher than holy. We can get on a high horse. I think that everybody should be allowed to participate in the hobby the way they want. But what ended up happening is we would end every episode debriefing, saying, how did you think it go? Whatever. And we always had the opposite opinions. He wanted to kind of tighten things up, you know, focus on some specific segments on wins and losses and specific plays and all that. And I wanted to dive deeper down the rabbit holes of collector stories and talking about the cards themselves, the aesthetics and that sort of thing. So he's still a good friend of mine, but it made me realize that this wasn't the right thing for us. And he realized it as well. So when we kind of split ways, I realized I loved the podcasting format. I wanted to keep creating content. I had an Instagram page at The Golf Card Collector, and I liked posting pictures and engaging with people, but I wanted to be able to talk, interview, share stories, actually really more just self-reflect. Kind of the whole goal of Fondling Cardboard is actually to uncover why I collect cards. Why am I so passionate? Because I love cards. I'm obsessed. If I had millions of dollars in the bank, I would have millions of dollars of cards the next day. So I just wanted to find out why and improve myself too, like get a handle on some of my impulse control. I don't like the word consolidation, and we can get to that a bit later. I do want to get bigger and better cards, but I have a hard time letting cards go. And I want to understand why that is, because maybe there is a bigger card out there that I would enjoy more than 10 smaller cards. I have such a hard time letting go of those smaller cards. And so through interviews, through reflection, I'm kind of trying to just improve my hobby experience. Of course, as a golf card fanatic, there's a big flavor of golf. I end up talking about golf 80% of the time, probably. But from my audience, you know, half of them come from my golf card community. The other half is just people I know in the hobby who just enjoy hearing passionate conversations and self-reflection.
One of the things I want to kind of dig into that I think is interesting, and I'm curious to learn from you. You mentioned when you were getting back into cards and you realized that there was golf cards, a lot of it was from your own research. It was like, instead of letting maybe content and information come at you, you went on offense and started to dig in and try to investigate and learn about golf cards and sets, because not only was it something you were doing for, you know, with your clients and probably for fun, but also something you were watching on TV and it piqued your interest. I'm curious about the learning element for yourself personally, and if there were like individuals who had existing content streams or pages that you could go connect with and learn from, or if it was just kind of you navigating and exploring and gathering as much information as possible.
In terms of content that was out there, there was virtually nothing. There's one guy who's obsessed with Ben Hogan, who of course was huge in the early 1900s to maybe 50s and 60s. And he's got a webpage dedicated to Ben Hogan trading cards, which is hilarious. And I love it. I love the passion. That was basically it. I mean, there's obviously experts out there. Nobody who's really created a YouTube channel or a podcast stream or an Instagram page that's maybe educational focused. But, you know, one guy that I would like to throw out there is Tiger Cards Only. And he, of course, only collects Tiger Woods cards and has an amazing collection. So that's a place that I like to go scroll through his feed just to learn about Tiger Woods cards. And there's a guy named John Morton in our Golf Cards and Memorabilia Facebook group who's our pre-war vintage correspondent. And he's obsessed with that era. and the most knowledgeable guy I know. And I really enjoy talking to him, picking his brain about vintage cards. I've picked up a few vintage cards. I've uncovered it's not really my niche, but I want to have one or two cards in my collection just to kind of represent that era. And he actually taught me, or he said something that was really interesting. Golf cards are the only sport other than baseball that have cards from every decade going all the way back to the 1870s. I just found that incredible, because when you think of the mainstream, baseball, basketball, football, how is golf in that category?
Oh man, that's insane. Not something that I would expect. And just since you mentioned it, and it wasn't on my like mind, which it should have been, to talk about, but maybe we can spend a moment here to talk about Tiger, because I think an individual like Tiger, much like an individual like Jordan in basketball, is like the magnetic force that can bring people into a certain segment. I mean, if you just like, I feel like if I spent the time and just went and like put all the categories of everything you could collect on the table, there's likely like that one individual that's like at the top tier that, you know, whether you're watching the sport or not regularly, people know and maybe would love to have a card or two. Maybe share Tiger's impact on the current state of golf card and, you know, golf card collecting, and just like anything you want to share from a Tiger perspective.
Tiger Woods is golf cards. I mean, of course, people are collecting the up and coming stars. People collect vintage players. When I started that podcast, I referred to with a friend. He asked me a similar question in episode one, and he said, you know, tell me about Tiger and the impact on golf cards. And my first reaction then was, in the conversation, there's two sides of the coin. There's Tiger Woods, and then there's everything else. And I would almost venture to say now it's even more than 50%. Tiger Woods is honestly, all golf cards collect Tiger in some fashion other than some, you know, sticky people. And then people who don't collect golf cards also collect Tiger Woods. So honestly, his impact is huge. You know, maybe I'll get into this a little bit later, because there are some kind of distinct eras of golf cards. And the modern era, I don't know if we would consider it modern or ultra modern, but basically the Tiger era begins in 2001 with Upper Deck. He had a few cards in the 90s. They weren't pack pulled, so they were promo cards, Sports Illustrated for Kids, that sort of thing. So 2001 is when Tiger gets his first pack pulled rookie cards. And that product was huge. It blew up. People were ripping cases upon cases, chasing the Tiger cards. A few months later that year, Upper Deck SP Authentic came out, which is kind of the higher end version of the Upper Deck flagship set. And SP Authentic had the Tiger Woods pack pulled rookie autograph cards numbered out of 699, I think it is. And then a gold version out of 100. And then some other autographs as well of Tiger and others in that set. And that itself, that blew it up even another step. So, you know, Tiger Woods, it's honestly hard to describe his impact on golf cards.
I think everybody, probably golf fan or not, can visualize that Upper Deck rookie card. I think about the other Tiger card that I've seen probably way too much of, and that's his SI for Kids card is another one that I've just seen. As like a casual and someone who doesn't dig into the weeds, what I would maybe love to learn from you is like if we're thinking about like holy grail of Tiger Woods cards, or like what Tiger Woods cards maybe if they went up for auction now would command the highest value or would be considered the most collectible, would it be anything that you just described, or would it be something different?
That's a great question. There's maybe two ways to look at it. One of them is the highest priced Tiger Woods cards. The other would be the most collectible, the most iconic. In terms of collectible and iconic, I would 100% say that rookie autograph card, the base one out of 699, that's one of my grails. Now you can pick up a low grade copy PSA 7 or whatever for, I don't know, maybe $4,000 or $5,000. So it's attainable, but it's up there. The gold is, gosh, I don't know, tens of thousands of dollars. The Tiger cards only guy, I think he might even have a PSA 10, possibly 10 autograph as well of that gold version. And so I don't know. Then you're getting into six figures for sure. for that particular card. Is that his most expensive? I don't know for sure. I honestly think it should be because it's the most important Tiger Woods card. However, like throughout the years, there's non-rookie stuff that's just so rare, you know. So there's one of ones. There's one of one autographs from 2014 or 2015-ish Master Collection. There's a Tiger Woods Master Collection where Upper Deck made this literally a wooden chest, and it was only Tiger Woods cards that you could get in this chest. It would come with like 20 cards or something like that. It had an 80-card base checklist. All the base cards are numbered out of 200. And then there was a one-of-one Tiger Woods autograph for every single one of his wins. So at that time, it was, whatever, 70 wins or 80 wins or something like that. So there's all these one-of-ones. So the fact that there's one for every win means they're not as valuable, but the ones that are valuable are going to be the majors. So if you get like the 1997 Masters Tiger Woods one-of-one autograph, then that, I mean, that is invaluable. Maybe not into six figures, but it's up there. And then there's one other card that comes into mind is in 2021, Fleer Metal Universe Champions had some golfers in it. Of course, they have Tiger Woods every year. And they first released retro Star Rubies, retro PMGs. And so there is a purple one-of-one Tiger Woods Precious Metal Gems. That card, I would say, would kind of be in the running with his gold rookie auto.
I think you mentioned I feel like there was one point in my return to the hobby experience, and it just, as you were describing it, this like moment jumped into my brain of like watching some like old grainy footage of someone busting open one of those Tiger Woods wooden boxes on YouTube or something. And I totally forgot about it, but like watching like the whole experience of someone opening up one of those things and like going through it, I was like, man, like, there's something about that and what I'm watching right now that I don't know. It just, I know there's Flawless and there's all these other like, you know, cards, but watching the people opening up that thing and getting what they got, it just, that it left an impression with me. So I hadn't thought about it up until you described it. What year were those boxes released?
I think it was 2014, maybe 2015. I think it was 2014. And I think I may have seen the same video or maybe others, because there were maybe 100 of those, or there must have been 200 of those boxes, because it has a base checklist of 200. Maybe there's 300 or 400 of those boxes, because obviously you don't get every base card in the box. But the one that sticks out to me was some older gentleman sitting in a kitchen, and
yes,
they had one plopped up on the counter. Yeah. That's hilarious. I watched that early on in my golf obsession as well. That's funny.
Yeah, I need to dig that back out, and we'll post it. I'll throw it in the story or something. It'll give you all a companion piece to watch alongside this episode. Okay, moving off Tiger, maybe talking about just golf cards in general. Someone new coming in, what is something that you would recommend they should know about when they're jumping into maybe golf cards for the first time?
Well, I mean, selfishly speaking, check out the podcast, because I talk a lot about golf.
Plug it.
Check out Fondling Cardboard wherever you get your podcasts. The Golf Cards and Memorabilia Facebook group, I'm admin, as well as a couple other golf enthusiasts. So feel free to throw up posts. We don't, we're a very actually positive community. We like when we see people asking questions. The only kind of turn off is when people try to take advantage, because the thing about a niche hobby is that people know a lot, right? People know their niche. And so from time to time, we see people who have some golf cards and they don't really care about them trying to kind of sell them for 2-3x comps, or, you know, maybe, I'm not going to use the word scammer, but people just that are a bit fleecy. And it's like, come on, take that somewhere else. We know what we're doing here. So I'm sure you have similar experience in wrestling groups. But in terms of like advice, I guess, that I can give, it's don't be tied to that Upper Deck flagship product. I really would love to have a good relationship with Upper Deck, and I'm friends with somebody that works there, and we chat from time to time. But at the end of the day, they haven't done the best job with the product. They've been scattered releases over the years. Nowadays, they aren't getting the biggest names. Scottie Scheffler doesn't even have Upper Deck golf cards, and he's the up and comer. He's the guy. He, in some betting odds web pages, they have him listed at like 2.5 to 1, like the 250 plus 250 to win the Masters out of a field of 89 players.
That's nuts.
It's like, how can you not have that guy and his cards? So don't necessarily buy into what the pure golf collectors like. And that's something that I've been wrestling with, because I really enjoy Upper Deck Goodwin Champions, because there's tons of golfers throughout the years. And when I say Goodwin Champions, it's kind of like along the lines of Allen and Ginter. You know, it's a set that people don't care about, except for the, you know, the hobby nerds. You know, there's a guy who has really inspired me. Jason, his handle is at Ginter Gold Fever. He's gone. You might know him.
He's been on the pod. Yeah, he's a good guy. There you go.
People know Jason. So he has gone all in on Allen and Ginter cards. And that really kind of allowed me the confidence to say, you know what? I can collect these shiny, rare parallels from Goodwin Champions, of Tiger Woods, of the all other golfers that I love. And same thing with Metal Universe Champions. You collect the PMGs, collect the other retro inserts that I love. And honestly, even Leaf, even other random sets. I mean, Leaf's been around for a long time. In fact, Leaf owns Pro Set, and Pro Set was the original modern golf carts from the 80s and 90s. So it's, and one of the reasons that, you know, I'm going to say it's okay, guys, it's okay to collect Leaf, is because golfers don't wear jerseys. They don't have numbers. They don't have team logos. So at the end of the day, can you even tell the difference from a beautiful looking Leaf card versus a beautiful Upper Deck card if we just took the manufacturer's name off of it? I mean, for those of you who are uninitiated, you probably couldn't.
That's so interesting, and not something that I had thought about or considered. When we're thinking about the community and the way people collect, is it mostly driven by, I'm going to collect my favorite golfer and I'm going to go in on all of their cards? Is it era based? Maybe talk a bit about some of the ways the community collects and operates.
It's interesting. The community is almost not up to times with like the current, you know, the bubble that blew up and then popped. I mean, they are in terms of pricing and things like that, but their style of collecting, actually, it was reminiscent of what I heard on your podcast on Friday. I forget the guy's name, but your wrestling friend. He talked about the fact that wrestling collectors like autographs. They like autographed memorabilia. They like, you know, these traditional ways of collecting. And I see a lot of that in golf as well. People like the flags, like we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. People like collecting golf balls that are autographed. People like, so when it, and that transfers over to cards. So autographs is a big thing in golf. No, I know you really like gold prisms, the black one, finite one of ones, that sort of stuff. And we are going to get that in golf, which is exciting, in prism later this year. But historically, it's been chasing autographs, tournament used patches on cards, things like that. And then in terms of like what lane, you know, are you a player collector? There isn't team collecting necessarily. Once we get into live golf, maybe there will be. But I would actually say that the traditional base set collecting is actually still alive and thriving. A good person that comes to mind is my friend James Peacock. And he's not some rich guy, right? But he has money. He could buy high-end cards if he wanted. He could play in that world. But for some reason, he loves the aspect of ripping open boxes, sorting all the base cards, figuring out what his holes are, and kind of calculating how much money am I willing to invest into the sealed products, because he likes to build the base checklist, start working on the inserts. And then he kind of has this threshold where he's like, all right, I've put too many thousands of dollars into opening the product. And now it's time I'm going to, you know, start trading. And he actually prefers to interact directly with people rather than just go to ComC or eBay and just pick up the singles. It's like, now, okay, I've got all these doubles, these duplicates, triplets. And he starts posting on Facebook. And it's funny when you see someone who has a collection worth, you know, five figures, who's on Facebook saying, trying to trade for cards that are worth less than a dollar. And that fires me up, because it just means he's so passionate about it. But on the flip side, of course, there's people who collect nice cards, shiny cards, rare cards. And I kind of walk the line, honestly. I really enjoy an eclectic collection. I've hyper-focused on a few lanes, but I can't live in just one lane.
It sounds like your friend is really embracing, and I wrote about this for the newsletter this past week, really embracing his younger self and how we collect. And just as you were talking through that, I was like, that sounds like what I would do when I was in third grade without Facebook, but just going direct with friends, just trying to trade base cards. You mentioned the autographs. And I have no idea about this, so I'd love to get some of your get some information on it. But just the autograph itself, like I think I think about autographs now, and I think about just like NBA, NFL. Those guys are just like signing all the time, and autographs are in like every product. So there's kind of oversaturation of autos, I would say a little bit. What's that like in golf? Like, are golfers signing regularly in person for these products? What does that look like?
So it does vary by era, and it is very athlete specific. There are guys, like in other sports, who are so hyper focused in on their sport, on their training, on being the best, that even the biggest companies, Upper Decks, Panini, whoever, aren't able to really get them to sit down and sign cards. And one of them is Scottie Scheffler. And I was speculating with a friend of mine the other day, why no Scottie cards? Upper Deck tried to get him. You know, not only is he not signing, but he wouldn't even give up his name, image, and likeness. And so we were trying to figure out, is it a personal reason or is it financial? Is he being blocked by an agent who's just being very sensitive to his time and energy, doesn't want those messages from fanatic card collectors saying, hey, can I send this through the mail? What, you know what I mean? Like, there's obviously a lot of aspects that athletes have to deal with when it comes to their fandom and fame. But looking back at like 2001 as an example, where there's a lot of great, great players, funny enough, some of them are still active. That's a big difference between football and golf, is that these guys play for decades. You know, and Jack Nicklaus won the Masters in his 50s. So looking at 2001 as an example, autographs were not easy to pull. It wasn't like a guaranteed hit, I don't believe, in hobby boxes. Although at the time, hobby boxes were like $20. So you could go splurge, spend $200, get 10 boxes, and sure, you're going to get some autographs. But it was printed to the moon. And nowadays, there are tons of those autographs. So it's just funny to reflect back at how rare they were to pull back then. There was the printing press was going burr so hard that nowadays, like, you can get a Matt Kuchar is a guy I like to use as an example. He had a great career. I don't think he's quite qualified as a Hall of Famer, but, you know, basically a guy who's like right on that edge. Like, if he were to win a major, then maybe he would get inducted. And, you know, you can buy his, you know, his sign of the times or whatever, like a nice autograph insert for a dollar or $2. And he's a solid player that people would PC. When you look nowadays, 2024 Upper Deck Golf, which is they finally went back to a flagship set, because even in 2021, when they started making golf cards again, they made these, let's say, higher end products, not necessarily high end, but like not the paper flagship printed to the moon type product. And they finally brought that back this year, just released last month. That set, they announced it would have it would be very hard to hit the autographs, but they would be in the set. We just found out there's literally like 25 or 30 autographs, not different autographs, pure end of story, 25 to 30 cards in the entire set. There's like 15 of them that are Will Zalatoris and like 10 that are Tiger Woods. So those are extremely hard to hit. And in the last month since release, we've only seen one hit eBay. So, you know, it's hard to kind of give a blanket answer to that, but yeah, it varies by era and player.
So you mentioned your own collecting. It's kind of the way I interpreted it is you kind of got your hands in a lot of different pots. And I think it reminded me of just jumping into wrestling cards for myself, where it was really hard out of the gates because I liked so much from an era. So many, I liked all the eras. I had been watching it my whole life. There are plenty of wrestlers that I liked. It was really hard to kind of scale back and limit exactly what I wanted to collect and what I wanted to spend money on. So I ended up just kind of going high and wide. Curious on just your approach, like how do you, because you're kind of casting a little bit of a wide net, how do you make sure that you're focusing in on buying stuff that's going to make you happy and fits inside the collection that you want to be building?
That's the mission I'm on right now. You know, I'm trying to discover how I can further niche down within my niche, because there's so many amazing aspects of golf cards. You know, just to run through kind of the main eras, you could be a pre-war collector like my friend John Morton. You could be just a general vintage collector because there's tobacco cards all the way from the 1800s to, you know, the 50s and 60s. Gary Player is an example. He's got a card from the, gosh, I forget if it's the 50s or 60s, but he's got a tobacco card that I have, and it's for his first ever card. And then meanwhile, he's still got cards in the 2000s for ultra modern. So, you know, and then continuing on in the 70s, we got Donruss, and that's where you see Jack Nicklaus's pack pulled rookie card. Of course, he had a tobacco card before that as well. You get into the 90s, maybe late 80s. I think it was in the 90s. We had Pro Set. Talk about a, you know, flagship set that was printed to the moon. You can still buy Pro Set boxes for $20. So, not necessarily super collectible, but for people on a budget, they can get some amazing cards and amazing names. Then the 2001 set really kickstarts the modern era of golf cards. Various sets, multi-sport sets you can collect. In fact, there's multi-sport sets throughout the year. I mean, heck, there's the 1933 Sport Kings is a huge iconic set for so many athletes from different sports. There's amazing Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones, various golfers from that set as well. And then you get into the ultra modern phase, which is, I like to say 2021 is kind of the beginning of the ultra modern era because the golf cards hadn't been printed since 2014. So then you get Upper Deck Artifacts, which is a set that I went all in on. I bought a couple hobby boxes at significantly inflated prices, but still had fun ripping them open. Nowadays I'm trying to not buy sealed product. I'm not made of money. So that's kind of that's what honestly goes through my mind, the different eras and how can I have a piece of everything? And so one thing I'm trying to do is really just accept that I can't have every card I like. And honestly, from each era, I can't necessarily have the card that I want, that the nicest card, the highest end card. So I'll use 2021 Metal Universe Champions as a good example. I would love to have that purple PMG Tiger Woods one of one. I would love to have that card. But of course, I don't have six figures to buy. And not only that, but how I wouldn't have been able to find it. I still don't know who owns it. But I can have that exact same card in a player that I love. And that's Matthew Wolff. So, you know, I'll hold this the screen. Here's a purple Matthew Wolff, precious metal gems. There's the serial in the back, one of one. And so although it's not the Tiger, I can have a player that I do PC. In fact, I have a crazy Matthew Wolff PC collection. You know, that satisfies my Matthew Wolff player collection. That satisfies my precious metal gems collection. And it satisfies the fact that I'm not going to get the Tiger. So I'll have the exact same card just with a different face on it. I still have some base sets that I, you know, started collecting in the 2020, 2021 kind of era. But what I've kind of zeroed in on is I have a lot of like random low end cards. I've got some nice high end cards and kind of, I like to kind of find this middle ground, which is creating like a subset of semi rare cards. And I'll use Retro Star Rubies as an example. Star Rubies is a fantastic parallel throughout the years, throughout sports. And I love it because other collectors from different sports can recognize it. So when if they look at my collection, they can admire that they understand the significance of Retro Star Rubies. When you were doing your parallel series, you really did it justice. Although I don't know if I'll agree with where it ended up placing in your rankings with your brother, but you know, that's an example where I do have to shell out $500 or something like that for the Tiger Woods, but then I can fill out a complete set with all the other golfers and I'm spending $5, $10, $15, maybe $30, $40 at most for, you know, one of the other guys. Actually, I think I spent maybe $70 or $80 on the Colin Morikawa, but I can end up collecting Star Rubies from 2021. And if Upper Deck or Skybox continues it throughout the years and they add a couple golfers, you know, I can start adding them to the set. So that's kind of where I'm settling. And I'm kind of doing that same hyper focus on a couple of other insert sets, and I'll probably end up showing you those cards when we get to the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, I love the fact that you've got a podcast where you can, you're trying to answer your own question and you can talk about it and everyone can go there to learn more. One of the things, I think we've got these like tent pole events in all in sports. I think about like for football, most people would think, oh, it's the Super Bowl when values go up. But actually, it's like mostly like before the season even starts. I'm curious on with golf, does an event like the Masters have any impact regarding like values of cards / bringing new people into golf cards for the first time? Or is it just kind of business as usual?
It absolutely affects prices. That absolutely affects hype, busyness, buzz of activity in the golf cart community. I kind of know what you're alluding to because I do collect other sports. I've got a basketball PC. I collect other kind of niche sports as well. F1, UFC. I collect sports that I watch. I do like team sports. I played basketball in high school, but I do kind of gravitate towards individual athletes. So track and field runners, that kind of stuff. And so what I notice is that in the mainstream sports, the hobby is smart and they've really kind of understood this cyclical nature of prices relating to seasonality. So the Super Bowl, the beginning of the season, and collectors are anticipating what's going to happen with prices. And I'm not noticing that as much in golf, because if that were the case, you would think, okay, through the winter, people would be kind of gearing up for the Masters, and you would anticipate that prices might start to climb as people start buying Tiger Woods cards. If you have the flippers mindset thinking, I'm going to sell this at the Masters week. Honestly, I get the best pickups of my PC throughout like January, which is, you know, a few months before the Masters. You'd think, gosh, if people were thinking about the Masters, that you'd see prices going up, but it's complete opposite. So once the Masters week here, once people start talking about it, once it hits the mainstream, you see it on the news, maybe a couple weeks leading up to the Masters, and people start hitting record on their PVR or whatever, that's when you start to see prices shooting up.
That makes sense. I want to get into, when I was on your show, we spent so much time talking about it and want to maybe get some perspective from you since that. But talking about Liv Prism, I think when I was on your show, I just talked about, especially like from the wrestling lens and just all categories specifically about like what Prism can do for a specific category of cards, because it's such a notable product. And some of those things are really good and some of those things maybe not so good. So I'm curious, just what's the latest with those cards release? Are people excited? Do people not care? Maybe share some perspective on Prism in golf.
In terms of excitement in the niche, it's really a mixed bag, very similar to the Liv controversial nature. And of course, Prism is tied to Liv. So honestly, there's a lot of collectors like myself who are aware of Prism. We know how iconic it is. We know how important and significant it is in the hobby. We can't wait to see those gold Prisms start popping up. Maybe waiting 6 to 12 months before we start picking them up ourselves, because we know how expensive they're going to be when they release. But just seeing those, the black one of ones, the who knows what inserts Panini is going to decide to put in there. I don't think downtown actually makes sense because golfers aren't associated with a city. You know, I talked about that insert when we were talking, but I realized afterwards, you know, what would Tiger have on a downtown? I guess Tiger isn't going to have a downtown because he's not playing on Liv. But, you know, Brooks Koepka, I think he lives in Florida. What's he going to have? Florida related stuff in his background? No, nobody associates him with the city he's from. But that's good news, because as great as downtown is, maybe we're going to get Color Blast, which is an even cooler insert set. Maybe we're going to get, you know, who knows what. So I'm only speculating here. But in terms of excitement, basically, I would say people that know Prism are excited. As I talked to you about, there's so many golf collectors that are just kind of blinds up, and they collect memorabilia. They love autographs. They're kind of the old mentality. They base, set, collect. They, I think, are going to be blown away at what Prism does. They're going to see this big burst of activity from non-golf collectors, which feel a little threatening at first, you know, because people are going to want to collect the biggest names. And so they're not going to understand why a gold prism could be selling for hundreds and possibly thousands of dollars when, you know, you'd be able to pick a Metal Universe Champions or Goodwin Champions or even Upper Deck card numbered out of 10 for $40, $60, even $150. But seeing a gold prism sell for a multiplier of that is going to be hard for some people. And then, of course, there's people who, regardless if they know Panini or whatever, just have it out for Liv. And they, for patriotic reasons or whatever, they don't like the league. They don't respect the players that have gone over there anymore. And, you know, honestly, everybody can have their own opinion and participate in the hobby that they want. But just to briefly hit on a couple of the exciting features, I guess, of that set is that golf historically has not had a team format. Liv brings that team game to golf. So we are going to have, you know, logos on, not jerseys, but you're going to have the Range Goats is my team on Liv. So we've got Matthew Wolf, Bubba Watson's the other guy I love on the Goats. And so, you know, you're going to be able to team collect. You're going to have, and because of that team format in the sport, Panini was able to get every Liv golfer without exception. Even guys that come, like Anthony Kim, who came mid-season, he's making his 10-year return to golf, professional golf. He was an up-and-coming star 10 years ago, and then he got injured. He actually sold all of his golf clubs, never, like, basically, you know, had to throw in the white towel, and now he's healed up and he's back, you know. But and so I asked Panini, is he coming? And they said, yeah, thumbs every single one of them. Because it's a team format, we get to sign with the league. The team, you know, has employees. Each player has to comply. Whereas Upper Deck's challenge with the PGA Tour is that everybody's an independent contractor. And even if they have a PGA Tour card, it's basically like saying they're a member, you know, hey, I'm a member of this fancy club. But they haven't forfeited their name, image, and likeness rights. So that's really exciting to get all of them. And then there's going to be huge names who we've never had in golf before. So the guys I like to refer to are Brooks Koepka and John Rahm are some of the biggest names. Huge, huge talents, major winners. Brooks Koepka, although hated for his personality, I don't know if he's in full swing, but he can seem like a bit of like a, I don't want to rub anybody the wrong way because everybody can have a different personality. But, you know, he's just a little bit like maybe a party boy. Just, I don't know. He doesn't seem that likable to me. Some people would have the complete opposite. You know, people who like to go to nightclubs and have that, you know, mentality might really like him. But he's a controversial guy. Regardless, could easily be a top 20 player of all time once all is said and done. And so for him to never have a card is ridiculous. I mean, there's the Sports Illustrated for Kids card, which is a whole other conversation. I know you don't like them, but Sports Illustrated for Kids, in my eyes, someday will be the new tobacco card. I think 80 years from now, people are going to look back at Sports Illustrated for Kids and they'll treat it the same way Sports King's gum or whatever tobacco said. So, however, I would like to still see actual cards and not just that flavor. And just to finish off, so I actually released an interview with a senior vice president at Panini, Jason Howarth, and his role is client or athlete retention at Panini. And he was specifically involved in the Liv golf deal. And as exciting as it is, you know, there was a lot of positive takeaways. The one thing that I didn't necessarily like from that interview is that he is really focused on marketing to golf fans rather than golf card collectors. So that's great for growing the niche. He talked about, you know, doing some box breaks with PGA players or PGA players, Liv players, you know, having that kind of advertising to golf fans. And then also to Panini fans. And like I said, a lot of golf collectors aren't even really familiar with Panini because they haven't had golf in the past. So I would have really liked to hear him say, how can we engage the golf card community. I would have liked to see him, you know, say, yeah, like let's do some golf card community stuff, but it really didn't go in that direction. But it really feels like it's going to grow the hobby because it's being marketed towards those external people.
I think I could write, maybe this is like, I'm going to parking lot this topic, but as a marketer, I'm super fascinated with how these manufacturers are approaching gaining attention and exposure, where what you just said in your critique makes a whole starting focus, starting small and growing outward makes a lot more sense. But the mentality, right, is probably revenue focused and getting revenue quick enough or quicker than, you know, growing fast. And so I don't know, I share in your sentiment on that. And that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother conversation, but maybe at some point we could go back, especially after kind of there's been, you know, Live Prism dropped and we can see based on the data what's happened, but that's a topic for a different day. But before I let you get out of here, I want to ask you about your collection and if you might share a few cards that are maybe your favorite cards in your collection and are personally significant to you.
Absolutely. You asked me to share three cards. I pulled out 10. I'm not going to show all 10, but it just goes to show that I have a hard time really narrowing down my focus. So I'll show you five here because I pulled out the ones that are really not golf related. So this one is one I talked about on a podcast episode. And it doesn't that look incredible? It's a Michael Jordan promo from the 1994 National. And it's a horizontal card side by side showing Michael Jordan wearing his Bulls jerseys, taking a jump shot. And the other side is Michael Jordan taking a golf swing. It's honestly, I would almost say my favorite card because it resembles my attitude in the hobby. It's not a rare card. It's not an expensive card. There's probably 10,000. Actually, it says limited edition, 1 out of 5,000. So there's 5,000 of these made. But, you know, for $5, $10, $20, whatever this cost, I forget. I own multiple copies of it because I love it so much. It's gold, it's shiny. It almost has that super fractor kind of look to it. So it just basically hits every checkbox for me. Affordable, beautiful, stunning, golf, basketball, MJ, GOAT, everything. Actually, one of the basketball cards I'm going to show off before I get into my top three golf cards. So this is a Steph Curry 2021 Prism Ice, cracked ice card. Doesn't look that special. I love Steph Curry. He's my second favorite basketball player. And this card on its own is probably only worth a few dollars. But what is so special and I love about this card is what's on the back. It's my favorite basketball card. So I've got my top two basketball players on one card, and this is an error card. So Panini accidentally had the wrong backs on the sheet and then paired with the wrong front. And somehow Steph Curry got paired with Steve Nash, Canadian Hall of Famer, best Canadian basketball player. Maybe Shai will beat him out. I don't know. But that's definitely up there. But when we get into my actual top three golf cards, so this is probably the biggest card. So this is a Tiger Woods autograph card from 2019 Upper Deck Goodwin Champions. And this is him throwing his arms up after he finally made a comeback win at the Tour Championship at East Lake. He won the Tour Championship, which is the last leg of the FedEx Cup. This was actually the last year where the winner of the Tour Championship isn't actually the winner of the FedEx Cup. So they changed the format after this. Basically, whoever won had the most points even after all the tournaments, won the FedEx Cup, even if he didn't win that last tournament. So it's kind of cool to think that if he had won it a year later, that he would have also won the FedEx Cup that year. 2021 Goodwin Champions, and this is a Cosmic Parallel, Tiger Woods, serial numbered out of 99. This is a PSA 10. And this is a card that I could talk about forever. When I first saw this hit eBay, it just blew my mind. I love it. Talking about, you and I were chatting about the eclipse and the cosmos and all that before we started recording. And this basically satisfies my craving for a little bit of space collecting. The shine to it, the depth to the card, everything. I went all in on Cosmics. I own hundreds of Cosmic golfer cards. I probably own 6 or 7 of each version of Tiger Woods. There's the base and there's the Gaudi. This one I'm holding up is the Gaudi because it's my favorite image. But I have, gosh, probably 30 of the Matthew Wolf ones alone, because as I said, I collect Matthew Wolf. And then last but not least, I refer to the fact that I collect other inserts and rare parallels. This is one of them. So this is the 2021 Artifacts Diamond Relics set. This one in particular is the Tiger Woods Quad Diamond. Upper Deck put embedded, you know, little lab-made diamonds into the card. They're all serial numbered out of 99 or 49, pardon me. There's also a green out of 5, which is EPAC exclusive, and there is a 1-of-1 version of each one as well. I'm not too worried about those really low ones. I'm happy collecting the out of 49 set, and I own the complete set. And I'm working on a second complete set. I already have two of the Tigers, two of the Jack Nicklauses. I'm just obsessed with this particular parallel. And this is a PSA 10 Pop 1.
Wow. Cool collection. Awesome conversation. I think just as the first dedicated golf episode on the Stacking Slabs podcast, I think Mikey helped do it some justice. So appreciate it. You can follow him at the Golf Card Collector, and make sure if you're wanting to learn more about golf cards and golf card collecting, you check out his podcast, Fondling Cardboard, wherever you stream. Fine audio. Mike, we'll have to do it again. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Brad.
Really enjoyed that chat with Mike. I talked with him on his podcast a little bit ago, so it was fun to do the collaboration. I love these conversations, bringing on someone new, talking about something that I don't know anything about. Hopefully you're learning a thing or two. Enjoy the Masters. Take care of yourself. Take care of others around you. Join that Patreon group and tell a damn friend while you're at it. Talk to you soon.